Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Star Wars Legends Lounge, the show that celebrates the books from Star Wars Legends. I'm Aaron Motes. On today's episode, the Clone War draws to a close. Cal Skarrata and his clone family plan their exit from the Grand Army of the Republic. Of course, unbeknownst to the characters, but looming on the horizon, Order 66. How will our heroes be affected by what might be the most notorious event in the galaxy far, far away? Well, we'll find out in today's book, Order 66, A Republic Commando Novel, by Karen Travis. And back to discuss the story of Darman, Attain, Cal Skarrata, Omega, Delta Squad, is the number one clone fan of the podcast, Kat. How are you today, Kat?
You know, I thought that you were a friend, and I thought that our friendship was strong, but I feel devastated. And while you didn't directly lead me down this path, I feel like you helped. So thank you for the love and sadness that comes with these books.
You're welcome.
That's what friends are for, right?
Exactly. So, Kat, you're familiar with Order 66. You've seen it portrayed numerous times from different angles. What did you expect to read when you started this book?
I knew that it was going to be sad, and I was really worried that it was going to be more of a, like, Order 66 takes over your brain. But in this one, it definitely wasn't like a brainwashing situation. It was more of a slow burn, because these characters were figuring out a lot of different things about what was going on in this war. And it was, so it felt like a really slow train wreck that you were just seeing so many different characters put so many different things together, but they couldn't stop it in time. So it was so good and so sad.
How did you experience this perspective of Order 66? Because we've gotten it in the past from the Jedi. We've gotten it from Anakin Skywalker's point of view. We've gotten it in the Clone Wars animated show from the point of view of Ahsoka Tano and Captain Rex. This point of view, of course, is from the clones, but also from some, I guess you could call Cal Skarrata and some of the people with him as outsiders, not actually really invested in Order 66.
Yeah, and their reaction was definitely surprising. Vow and Skarrata kind of have a conversation of, like, yeah, Jedi could really be seen as the enemy, and they kind of get on that train. And the conversation that they have is so interesting, and when it comes to Mandalorian and the bounty hunters and everything that the Jedi took out in taking out Fett and everything. So they were kind of like, yeah, get rid of the Jedi. What are they good for? And it's such a wild concept to hear that from this perspective.
Well, Kat and I will talk more about the book coming up in a few moments. But first, it's listener question time. Kat and I have two emails today.
Today's first email comes from Luke, who says, "Hello again, Aaron. This time I have three questions. What is your favorite good guy's ship and your favorite bad guy's spaceship? Do you prefer Jedi or Sith? Also, I have a theory about Snoke. I think Snoke is Mace Windu. When Mace was falling from the window in Palpatine's office, he was probably annoyed with Anakin. He had or has a purple lightsaber, meaning he is between the good side and the dark side. Maybe his annoyance towards Anakin tipped him over the edge, and he wanted to take revenge on Anakin, but he had to lie low until the Empire was wiped out. When he learned that Anakin was dead, he decided to target his descendant, Luke, instead.
Thank you very much for the email, Luke. And interesting theory. It doesn't work for me, but if it works for you, great. I just accept the story we got about Snoke, that he was a failed clone of Palpatine used to tempt Ben Solo to the dark side of the Force. It seems as though, Luke, you ascribe to the theory that Mace Windu survived falling out of that window. I know Samuel L. Jackson subscribes to that. He wants to do more Mace Windu stories. So while I don't think Mace is Snoke, maybe you're onto something, that Mace is still alive. As to your questions about the spaceships, my favorite good guy spaceship is the Millennium Falcon. My favorite bad guy spaceship would be the Super Star Destroyer Executor. And do I prefer Jedi or Sith? I guess I prefer the Jedi. Normally, I prefer the good guys over the bad guys. Not that one is more interesting than the other, but I always root for the good guys to eventually come out on top in the end.
Yeah, I'd definitely say my favorite good guy ship would, the Falcon is up there because it's just so iconic, and Chewie is, you know, at the helm. But I also love Anakin Skywalker spaceship, and then on the bad guys, I love Darth Vader, you know? Dude knows how to pick a good ship, no matter what side he's on, so I'm always here for it. I don't prefer either the Jedi or the Sith, but if I had to pick one, probably the Sith, just because I, you know, love a girl with a dark past. So, you know, it's always fun to see kind of the turmoil and what gets them over to the dark side and the different takes they have on that. The Jedi, if we're talking about the Jedi before, you know, Order 66 and everything, they are very problematic. And in reading these books through the clone eyes, we see that abundantly, that they have so many problems that they have just kind of ignored and let by the wayside, and has really taken their order astray. Versus when you get to the new Jedi Order, Luke is trying to turn that direction around, and I really like that a lot better. So, as for Mace Windu being alive, I think. It was a good character and story development to have those Jedi die the way that they did. So while it'd be cool to have Mace alive, they had to die in order for a new type of Jedi to be able to thrive in this galaxy, because their ways were dying out quickly. And I think that they had to die. But, you know, theories are always fun to discuss.
Today's second email comes from Robin, who says, I've started to dig more into the personality and identity of Darth Vader and try to find out how this character works on a deeper level. You often describe Anakin Skywalker and Darth Vader as separate characters on your podcast, so I want to look at them with new eyes. In a way, Darth Vader was a coping mechanism for Anakin. Anakin created Vader to separate himself from the acts that he was committing and to deal with all the things he lost and the trauma he had experienced. Unlike Maul or Dooku, he doesn't have to look at himself in the mirror anymore. He was feared. He was respected. And for every Jedi he slayed, every rebel building he burned down, every prisoner he broke, it was easier for him to achieve his illusion of order and control. But it was all a lie he told himself. like a fallen angel who can never return to heaven. The only thing he can do on earth is to bring people down to his level. What are your thoughts? Well, thank you very much for the email, Robin. That's a very interesting description of Vader. I can see your point of view. I agree with a lot of your perspective on Vader. Even though I describe Vader many times as one entity and Anakin as another entity, mostly that's because of my age and how I grew up. I had a relationship with Vader for 21 years before I was introduced to Anakin Skywalker in The Phantom Menace. They didn't feel connected to me. I know they are the same character, but that's why I describe it that way. The one part I don't agree with in your description is that Vader is a coping mechanism for Anakin. Anakin always believed that if there was a firmer grip on the galaxy, controlling people, maintaining order, that the galaxy would be better off. Anakin always believed, in my point of view, that the ends justified the means. Now, do I think he ever would have gone as far down the dark path as he did without a credible threat to Padme? And then, of course, after Padme dying and Obi-Wan defeating him on Mustafar? No, I do not. But I still think there is plenty of Vader in Anakin before he officially puts the helmet on.
Yeah, I definitely agree with a lot of what you said, Aaron. And I love the point that Robin brings up about the mask kind of helping him feed into that illusion just a little bit more. Like you said, there was always a little bit more of Vader in Anakin, but having the different mask, the different persona, really helps him to achieve that personality, to achieve that larger-than-life myth that he's created around himself. And definitely like using that imagery of the mask kind of being the power that he shows. And he, you know, he likes to be famous. He likes to be well-known as Anakin or Darth Vader. He wants people to know that he's the most powerful, that he's the best at the lightsaber battles, that everything. So just being able to kind of further that myth of himself definitely helps him feed into that psychosis and kind of get rid of reality for himself. The consequences, like you said, don't matter as much as long as the means are met.
Thanks again for the emails, Luke and Robin. Now, listener, if you have a question for the show, you can email me at swlegendslounge@gmail.com or send me a tweet at legendslounge1. And if you'd like to get your voice on the show, just record a short message and email it in. Just please record it in MP3 audio format. And coming up at the end of the show, Kat and I have received some Star Wars character groupings. You'll want to stay tuned for that. But now it's time for today's book, Order 66, A Republic Commando Novel, by Karen Travis. Grab yourself a drink. Let's head in to the Star Wars Legends Lounge.
The story begins with Cal Skirata searching for a cure to stop the clones' accelerated aging. Cal feels that his family will need to bug out soon. Using the information Bessany Winnan discovered, the Knolls have discovered a secret fleet of ships and clones that are being grown in only 2 years. But Bessany's investigation has tripped the interest of Republic intelligence. An undercover agent follows Bessany when she leaves the Treasury Department. Just before the agent grabs Bessany, Ordo saves her and kills the agent.
General Zay receives orders from Palpatine's office. A new offensive sending the Jedi and special forces to several planets on the front line of the war. Omega Squad is sent into Separatist space, while Etain is told she's going with Delta Squad to reinforce the Wookiees on Kashyyyk. Before she leaves, Etain visits her son Venku. Little Kadika has been staying with Atine's girlfriend, Lasima, the Twi'lek, who is incredibly caring and empathetic to Etain's situation. Etain's heart breaks to leave her son, but she knows that hiding Venku is the only way to keep him safe. Etain tells Lasima that she plans to tell Darman about the baby when they return to Coruscant. She makes Bardan Jusik promise to take care of little Kadika if anything were to happen to her or to Darman. She wants the former Jedi Knight to keep the Order away from her baby.
On Mandalore, Fi continues to heal. While he still has some memory problems, Fi has improved so much that he can now walk around town on his own. In fact, Fi's improved so much that when Cal and the Nulls start planning on breaking Dr. Uthon out of prison on Coruscant, Fi talks his way into the mission. While the group finalizes their plans, Cal receives a message from one of his real sons, saying that Cal's daughter, Rue, has gone missing. While Cal's two sons divorced him as their father, Rue never did. Cal asks that the Nulls investigate his daughter's disappearance. Mareel discovers Rue in custody on Coruscant. It seems that Rue was fighting as a mercenary for the Separatists, and now she's in a POW camp. Cal tells Ordo to amend the plan to break out Dr. Uthon and his daughter.
Darman returns just before Etain is scheduled to leave. When he arrives at Lasima's apartment, he finds Etain holding the baby. They're the only ones there. Darman asks what's happening, when Etain finally tells him the truth. The baby is her son, Venku. Her son and Darman's. The news stuns Darman. He lashes out, accusing Etain of breaking his trust. Etain pleads with Darman. She wanted to tell him, but she didn't know how. And when she told Cal Skirata about the baby, he said to wait to tell Darman. Unable to handle the news, Darman leaves and heads back to the barracks.
Soon, Cal, Bardan, Fi, Vow, and the Nulls arrive from Mandalore. Darman confronts Cal about Venku. Cal admits it was his idea for Etain to keep Kadika a secret. His words nearly destroy Darman. He's never felt so betrayed. Without thinking, Darman punches Cal in the face. Instantly, Ordo moves to stop Darman, but Vow intervenes. Darman and Cal need to have this out. Blinded by rage and with tears streaming down his face, Darman pummels Cal, who refuses to fight back. When the two fall on the floor, Niner and Ordo step in to pull Darman off their adopted father. When Darman calms down, he apologizes to Cal, who begs Darman's forgiveness.
Omega, Delta, and Etain head out on their respective missions a few days later. A few days after they leave, Cal puts his extraction missions into motion. Fi and the ARC trooper deserters, Sull and Spar, head to the POW prison. They present fake transfer orders to walk in and abduct Rue. Meanwhile, Bardan, Cal, and Mareel impersonate doctors and break Dr. Uthon out of the psychiatric ward where she's being held. As they leave, Bardan gets a weird feeling in the Force, coming from one of the other rooms. Inside, they find a woman who's nearly psychotic. But Cal recognizes her. It's Arla Fett, Jango Fett's sister. But she's been missing for years. Bardan doesn't know why, but the Force tells him to take Arla with them.
Etain and Delta help Master Yoda lead the counteroffensive on Kashyyyk. They help the Wookiees push the droid army out of the trees and back to the beachhead. Tragedy strikes when a missile hits the bunker where Etienne and Delta are hiding. Sev is lost in the blast, causing Scorch to go nearly berserk searching for his brother in the rubble. They aren't able to find Sev when Yoda calls a retreat. General Grievous and the Separatist fleet have arrived at the capital. The Battle of Coruscant has begun.
Etienne and Delta Squad arrive on Coruscant in the midst of the battle. They avoid the fighting and make their way down through the atmosphere. As Etienne heads to the Special Ops headquarters, Cal puts out the call to everyone. It's time to bug out and head to Mandalore. Etienne records a message for General Zay, resigning her commission and leaving the Jedi Order. She also finds a message waiting for her. It's from Darman. A marriage proposal. Etienne records her own message for Darman, accepting the proposal. She lands as the Separatists retreat, and Grievous heads back to his base on Utapau.
The clones begin cleaning up in the after effects of the battle when a comm signal comes out on all Republic channels. Execute Order 66. Darman and Niner are confused. The Jedi have tried to overthrow the government? Cal orders everyone to meet at the extraction point across the Shinarkan Bridge. They have to leave now. Cal and Ordo watch as a group of newer clones search a large group of people trying to flee some of the destruction on the streets around the Jedi Temple. In the middle of the crowd, they see Omega Squad. But where is Etienne?
Just as Omega approaches Cal and Ordo, Cal receives a call from Etienne. She's in the middle of the crowd, but she is slowly making her way toward them. The clones searching the crowd create a bottleneck at the entrance to the bridge. Just as Cal and the clones see Etienne enter the checkpoint, someone starts shouting, "Jedi!" It's a group of three Padawans trying to sneak through. Suddenly, the Padawans ignite their lightsabers. The clone troopers start firing. Terrified, Darman sprints back to the bridge to find Etienne, with Niner right on his heels. The scene is complete chaos. One of the Padawans goes down, and then Etienne emerges from the crowd and runs towards Darman. She sprints between the clone guards and one of the Padawans, when suddenly her body goes rigid. She falls dead at Darman's feet, a lightsaber slash across her back.
The crowd surges across the bridge. It's a stampede of frightened people trying to get away from the fighting. Darman and Niner are swept up in the flow and pushed toward the edge of the bridge. They try to fight the crowd, but Niner is pushed over the edge and falls to the next lower level. Darman is nearly overcome with panic, but he's able to rappel down to where Niner lies, his arms and legs bent in unnatural angles. Niner says he can't feel his legs. He orders Darman to leave him. "Go with Cal," he shouts. "Your son needs you." But Darman refuses and stays with Niner on the landing. They watch as Cal's ship takes off, heading to Mandalore and safety.
The Clone War ends a few days later. On Mandalore, the group mourns Etienne's death. Little Kadika doesn't understand what's happening. But soon, a freighter arrives carrying Etienne's body. When Kadika sees his mother lying on her funeral pyre, Bardan believes the boy can understand what has happened through the Force. Following the cremation, Cal takes Etienne's ashes and starts to build a memorial to her and all the clones who died in a war that never made sense.
On Coruscant, Darman, Niner, and the surviving members of Delta Squad become Imperial Commandos. Darman and Niner decide to go along with the hunt for any missing Jedi until they can find the right moment to escape to Mandalore. The story ends at Skarada's compound. Cal receives a message from a pilot the Nulls trust. The pilot says she's got a pair of Jedi stowaways, a teenage girl, and an ancient Kaminoan, and they need a safe place to hide. Cal agrees to take them in. The Kaminoan may be of use to Dr. Uthan, as she continues to search for the cure to stop the clone's accelerated aging.
Time for a break. When we return, we'll talk more about Order 66, a Republic Commando novel. I'm Aaron Motes. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Star Wars Legends Lounge. Thank you for listening to the Star Wars Legends Lounge, where we celebrate the books from Star Wars Legends. But let me take a moment and recommend a book from Star Wars canon. Padawan is the story of young Obi-Wan Kenobi's first solo mission. Determined to win the approval of his master, Qui-Gon Jinn, Obi-Wan tries to help a group of young people on a strange, dangerous planet. Can Obi-Wan save the teens before the planet destroys them? Find out in Padawan by Kirsten White. Welcome back to the Star Wars Legends Lounge, the show that celebrates the books from Star Wars Legends. I'm Aaron Motes, and today, Kat and I are talking about Order 66, a Republic Commando novel, by Karen Travis, the fourth book in the Republic Commando series. Now, listener, Kat did a whole bunch of research for this show. She wrote a lot of questions that we are going to go over, but I want to start out with just your feelings. You've come to know these characters now over four books. Etain's a Jedi. You could kind of figure out what was going to happen with Order 66. However, what was it like when the chaos on the bridge happened? How did you experience that?
My heart was pounding. I was panicked the moment that I started on page one, but it really started to ramp up after Skarada's like, yeah, I think we got to put this plan in place. And then he started to explain how the plan was going to go. And you know, whenever you're reading a book and they start explaining how the plan is going to go, it's never going to go that way. And then they hear the uttered Order 66 from that creep Palps. And I'm panicked the entire time and flipping through pages about who is going to get hit when and where is it going to happen. And I was honestly, whenever you get to like a chaotic bridge, wherever the characters can see one another and they can't get to one another, oh my God, I was hyperventilating whenever I was reading this because I felt it coming. I felt it in the Force that something bad was about to happen. But man, I cringed that this is how Etain goes out. And just everybody was devastated. And Skarada goes crazy. And Darman is in shock. And it's just horrible to read in the best way possible.
And then what did you think about Darman and Niner specifically, but also Delta Squad, deciding to remain with the newly formed Empire and not go with Skarada and the rest of their adopted family because they had this escape plan? They set this in motion years ago, even right at the beginning of the war.
It feels terrible, right? Because the entire, like, the last half of the last book and most of this book, all of these characters, definitely in Omega Squad, and even towards the end with Delta Squad, they're like, yeah, I don't want to do this for the rest of my life. I absolutely don't want to do this anymore right now. Like, we don't know how long our lives are going to be. We know that Skarada may be working on some kind of plot, but we're not really on the know. Like, the Nulls are the ones who are in the know about everything. But Omega and Delta Squad only know pieces. They assume a lot, but they don't know exactly what's going on. So, their decision to stay is for their brothers, which is the decision that they make every single time. So it absolutely makes sense for them to, like, for Darman specifically, he's staying with Niner because he doesn't want them to basically execute him because he can't function. The other ones, I'm a little like, go, please leave, please get some happy endings in here. Like, it breaks my heart that they stay. I get it on some level because it's for their brethren, but I hate it. Is that kind of how you felt? Like, whenever, do you remember whenever you read it the first time or even this time through?
So this is the second time I've read it. I was still really just focused mostly on the family unit. Atain, Darman, and little Venku, little Kadika. That's how I experienced this one. This version of Order 66, to me, is almost as personal as how we experienced Order 66 in the Clone Wars animated show through Ahsoka's eyes. The only reason that one's a little more personal to me is because we got more time with Ahsoka. We learned more about Ahsoka. But still, I love these characters too. And I think it's that personal relationship that we, the audience, have with characters that we grow to love that makes these events so heart-wrenching.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, these books are so good at giving us little moments with these characters. We don't just get, like, big action sequences and overarching, like, plots or storylines or, I mean, even the romances. We get little moments with each couple that makes it feel like this is why they go together. Or so the fact that we get, you know, these little interactions between Delta and Omega, between Skarada and his boys. I mean, these books do a lot of work for me, and I think that's why I'm just worried about all of them 100% of the time, knowing that this Order 66. And so I feel like the way that they portrayed it with, like, the new clones that they had accelerating growth, those clones were more of a quote-unquote brainwashed situation versus these original older commando and ARC troopers don't have that same, they don't have the quote-unquote chip, or they don't have the same brainwashing. They're just kind of like, oh, we know the orders. We never thought they'd be implicated, but, I mean, an order is an order, and if the Jedi have gone rogue, we know that some of the Jedi are not so bad, but we don't know that about all of the Jedi. So it's just crazy to me.
So I was going to bring that up a little later, but since you broached the topic, let's bring it up now. Until the early 20-teens with the Clone Wars animated show and with Rebels, we, the audience, didn't really have any knowledge about inhibitor chips. Order 66 was simply an order given to the clones. They followed the order and started executing the Jedi. There are some fans who prefer the version of Order 66 taking place this way, the way we see it in the Republic Commando video games, the way we see it in these books here. And there are others that prefer the inhibitor chip storyline. One thing I've always felt challenged about was just how, after the order is given, how the clones that we see in Revenge of the Sith just instantly turn and start shooting their Jedi generals. You mentioned it. I think Karen Travis does a good job in this book trying to explain that is the flash learning that a lot of the newer clones get. I think there are pros and cons of both versions of why the clones turn, but I think ultimately the version I like just a little better is the inhibitor chip reason for why the clones turn. And I say that because of how instantly they turn in Revenge of the Sith. And I also think it's a more tragic story from the clones' point of view after, you know, we've grown to love these characters, is they've almost been turned into the droid army that they hate. And I think dramatically, that's kind of delicious.
Yeah, that's great storytelling that they unbeknownstly become, which, you know, as Skirata and Ordo and the Knolls kind of put together, this war is a whole, like, facade anyway. The numbers that they are saying about on both sides are totally conflated, totally made up, that nobody is questioning, that they say they have trillions and billions of droids, and everybody's like, there's no way that any planet has the amount of power, money, whatever, to be able to create that kind of droid army. Is anybody asking any questions? No. Same thing with, like, the clones are on this side. They know how many clones are left, and they're like, don't know where you're going to be getting new clones or when, because they're certainly not coming from Kamino. So, the fact that they're using these soldiers with brains, you know, is why they had to create maybe a new, you know, accelerated growth who have less forethought for themselves. And they were like, that worked for a time, and we have to quickly get rid of that, because it's almost like they needed the first batch of clones to be more human-like so that they could get the Jedi on their side, because they were almost an enticing factor to keep the Jedi in the war. Because if you get the point of view from Jusik whenever he started, Etain whenever she started, many of the Jedi stayed in that war as generals so that they could protect the clones around them. So they were almost that enticing factor to keep those Jedi there to then be able to flip the clones on them. It's a whole diabolical, scary, scary story to be a part of.
That's a lot of emotions, and I'm sure we're still going to talk about the emotions, but let's go specifically into some of the questions that you had with this story. I know you really like the character of Barden Jusik. What is it about Barden that you really like?
He is actively questioning everything he's being taught. He is not just taking the information as is. He's questioning information from the Jedi Council. He's questioning information coming from the Knolls and Skirata. He is trying to really put himself in the shoes of the men that are fighting around him, and that's why he makes that decision to be able to switch over to kind of be a Mandalorian Jedi type of dude, and really stands up for what he thinks is right and wrong. He calls out at one point saying, you know, the Jedi should be less worried about the light and the dark side and worry about the practical things in front of them of what they are doing in that moment that is right and wrong. And I think that has a lot of validation in these books that we're watching.
A lot of the things that Jusik does after leaving the Jedi Order in the previous book are much more what I think the galaxy needs from a Jedi than what they're actually getting from the Jedi.
Big time. Yeah, he is trying to be the example. And, you know, he has a quick conversation with a young Padawan that's like, oh, yeah, you're the traitor. You know, you left the order, everything like that. And he's like, look, you can think that all you want, but what I'm doing is actively helping to try and see, you know, what planets, what citizens, what clones, what, like, entities actually need help versus just following orders. So if that's the life you want to lead, then you follow orders like the droids, like, you know.
Yeah, he's one of the few people that we know of that is trying to help the innocents who are caught up in this war. Not the Grand Army of the Republic, not the members of the Separatist Alliance who have plunged the galaxy into civil war. Bardhan is trying to help the people on these war-ravaged planets that have been just caught up in the fighting.
Yeah, absolutely. He has the best of intentions, and he tries to follow through on those as best as he can. And I think that that's absolutely the example that the Jedi should be trying to go after and kind of, you know, Etain feels the same way.
Etain does feel the same way. She felt the same way in the first book, Hard Contact. The only issue with Etain is she could never overcome the loyalty that she felt to her soldiers. She wants to leave. She wanted to leave for 3.5 books. She finally has had enough, and she does leave in this book. But if only she could have left sooner. If only she could have left when Bardhan left.
Yes. If only she could have just gone straight from Kashyyyk to Mandalore and totally skipped. Why did she need to go back to Coruscant? Why? Just to break our hearts? Thanks, Etain. Unnecessary.
Yeah, because Kadika wasn't there. Kadika was on Mandalore at that point. She could have just gone to her son.
Yeah, absolutely. And I she knew that was the plan. I know that, you know, the messages weren't getting through from Coruscant, but I feel like she could have, for 2 seconds, done a meditation and sensed where Kadika was and gone. Done and done. Like, she should have, could have, would have, so many things. Like, just stay in place and wait for them to come and get her. Or just, you know, so much. It's fine.
So one of the things you said that you enjoy about all of these stories are the little blurbs at the beginning of each chapter that aren't really involved in the plot or with the characters in the chapter, but they kind of describe the theme of what people are going to read going forward. And they also foreshadow some of the stuff you're going to read going forward. I remember in one of the blurbs, they start talking about the 150 orders that the clones have to memorize. And one of the orders is Order 66. And what it says, in the event that the Jedi try to overthrow the Supreme Chancellor, the clones have to execute the Jedi. The Grand Army of the Republic is the Jedi's army.
Nobody had any questions here. What?
Guys. Obi-Wan discovers them in Attack of the Clones. The Kaminoans turn them over to the Jedi. Yoda even says, yeah, it's kind of weird that there's this secret army of 2 or 3 million clones from 10 years ago that we don't really have any idea about. But you know what? They might come in handy in this war. Let's take them in.
And don't know who ordered them, who paid for them. Hello?
But yet, as they're serving alongside of them, not once do they start to look at the protocols and say, hey, you know, Order 1, yeah, that's kind of cool. Order 150, man, you guys have a lot of... Wait, what's this Order 66 right here?
Right, execute all, every single one of them immediately?
You mean, Cody, you're going to turn around and shoot at me if this comes out?
Hello? What? Guys, nobody looked at the... They're like, oh, and everybody is so nonchalant about it. They're like, yeah, we got to memorize, though. It's fine, everybody. You know, you almost forget them, but, you know, you're just kind of fed them at an early age. And there's a couple other ones that, you know, you got to get rid of this race of aliens or this race. Like, that's not the only one that has complete annihilation of a certain type of being in the galaxy? What?
And part of me is also curious because Jango Fett found these sergeants to help train all of them. The sergeants are pounding these orders into the clones' heads. So they go to work for the Jedi, and I'm surprised that, you know, we know how much Cal Skirata likes to talk. I'm surprised at some point Cal doesn't look over at Barden and say, hey, you know, there's this one order that I had to teach the Nulls and Omega and Delta. It's called Order 66, and here's what it says. You think at that time Barden wouldn't have gone to General Zay and said, hey, General, we may have an issue here with this one order. You may want to look into this. Run it up the chain a little bit. See if the High Council has any idea about this.
Literally ask any clone, because they all know them, and like have them recite all 150, flag the ones that we have problems with, which I'm sure are 149 out of those 150. And, I don't know, ask some questions, do some re-education.
The Padawans and the younglings too? Like, what do they have to do with this?
Also, specifically after we go after the Chancellor, you're saying it specifically says the Chancellor, in parentheses, Palpatine. You know, like, it's not in, it's in parentheses that it's Palpatine. So, like, should we, like, ask the Chancellor? Like, should we follow the money trail? I'm just, ask any questions is all I'm saying. But it's almost like I said, that's why I think this Jedi Order had to die, because they are all just, like, breathing in their own hot air. Everybody is taking the responsibility off of, like, we have to win this war. But nobody is asking, why are we fighting this war? Why aren't we making any progress? Or why are we continuing to let the Senate tell us where to go, but also we're independent and the army is ours, but not really, because they're also the Republic's property? What? And these are people that are property, kind of like slaves. Okay.
And even the Jedi in these stories, when they're discussing the clones with each other, the Jedi will, a couple of them will say, you know, it's probably not right that we're using slave soldiers here.
I both love and hate this storyline so much, because at any point, one singular citizen, Jedi, Republic senator, so many people on this planet of Coruscant and in the galaxy could have asked any questions. None of them do, which feels they do, but they ask them too late, or they figure it out like not too soon. So in that part, I get it. And we get such a good emotional payoff from all of this, but also it feels so illogical for so much of this to get past of all of these people for so long.
So we have one more book in the series. It's called Imperial Commando 501st. I have not read that book yet. It is one of the few legend stories I have not read. I remember starting it when it first came out, but I only got maybe a couple chapters into it, two or three chapters at the most. So the vast majority of this book is going to be new for me. What are you expecting in this next story coming up? Because I had asked you previously, do you think Venku, aka Kadika, is ever going to know his parents? Well, he's not going to know Atain now. I personally don't think Darman is going to get out and get to Mandalore and the safe house.
Yeah, it doesn't feel great that they are... I feel like it's definitely... If we do see the two in the same place together, it's not going to be for very long. Or... like, he will have been poisoned, or something will happen where, you know, he gets to say goodbye, you know, your mother and I loved each other and we love you, but I don't think, or he'll leave the kid a message. I just don't know about him getting off and how they're going to be able to get away from the Grand Army. I don't know. how exactly that looks. It probably is not going to be great. But I'm really hoping that maybe Niner at least gets off and he's like, look, your dad saved me and I will forever owe you a debt. And all of Emego Squad will kind of be in that same. So he'll have this huge group of, previous clones and Mandos around him to be able to tell the story of his parents.
Do you think the Empire is going to chase down Cal Skirata and the group on Mandalore? Because they're deserters.
Yeah, and I'm sure Palpatine does not want that story out there of, these are how events could have been. He doesn't know what they know, which is even worse. So he suspects that they know some things here and there. But also, if you refer to like the middle of the book, these clones have squirreled away trillions of credits, guys.
1.3 trillion.
So many. So I feel like if they need to run and hide for 10 lifetimes, they could probably do it and then some. I don't know how that'll look. They might lose a few on the way. I really don't know if they're just gonna have to kind of bunker down. He's definitely gonna come after them, and it's not gonna be pretty. All I want is Fi and his girlfriend. Like, I want a real wedding. All of these other Mandos, their weddings were like, hey, you want to get married? The girl's like, yeah, absolutely. And they're married. Like, that's great for the Mandos, but also, I want a whole dang ceremony. I want a whole celebration. I want one moment of pure celebratory happiness before it all goes to hell in a handbasket. That's all. It's fine.
So one thing I do know from reading other legend stories is that two of the characters in these stories do live on. So it's not like everyone is going to be killed. I'm not going to say who they are. Other than those two characters, and listeners, you may be screaming at your radios or whatever you're listening to your podcast on, that you know who they are.
Yeah, but don't tell me. Come on,
No,
guys. Keep it a
no. I'm
secret.
not gonna ruin it for Kat or any other listeners who may not know. But besides those two characters, I could see, quite a number of these characters not making it out of the next book. I don't believe that Dr. Uthon is going to stop the clones aging. I just see nothing really but heartbreak going forward.
Well, Aaron, on that incredibly happy note,
I mean,
I
do you
mean,
disagree? Can you see some happy endings going forward? Because I have a difficult time seeing it.
I think that at least some of them are going to find quiet endings, or like it's never going to be quite happy, right? Because they're not going to have all their brothers with them. They're gonna have to be in hiding. X, Y, and Z. Like, so much is gonna have to happen, and they're gonna have to scatter. I think that if they were able to scatter to the reaches of the galaxy and keep quiet, they might be able to live good lives for 10 years. It's not gonna be very long because, like you said, I also agree. I don't think Dr. Uthon is gonna be able to reverse aging. And even if she finds a cure, I don't think it's gonna be easy, and I don't think it's going to be accessible to them. They have to like switch an entire gene or something. Like, they really don't know how that is going to have to happen, and I just don't see that happening. So even if some of them do make it out or find a place to hide to stay there, it won't be for very long. And especially if, the Emperor, while he has the time, goes searching for them. I don't know. I just have a hope that some of them are going to make it. And I don't think it's going to be great, but at least they'll have somewhat of a life for a little bit.
I guess we'll know in 2 weeks.
I'll be crying and it'll be fine. And I'm already heartbroken and devastated. What more could they do to me?
I'm sure they could do a lot.
Yeah, I know. Look, Kara Travis is a very good writer. I know that she's going to continue to yank my heart out of my chest. It's fine. Who needs it?
Well, we'll see. All right, listener, it's almost time for Kat and I to go. But first, we received a few Star Wars character groupings. I love reading these. The first comes from Wes, who wanted to share his Mount Rushmore of Star Wars Legends authors. Wes's list consists of Timothy Zahn, James Luceno, Michael Stackpole, and Drew Karpyshyn. Wes says, Karpyshyn wrote less than the others, but the Bane trilogy is his favorite Legends story. He says it's so masterfully written, he had to put Karpyshyn on his Mount Rushmore. Excellent list, Wes. That's a strong Mount Rushmore of Legends authors.
Our second Star Wars character group comes from Luke. Rather than come up with the Starfighter Squadron, Luke came up with a ground team he named the Wells Legion. The commander is Mace Windu, with co-commanders Anakin Skywalker and Ki-Adi Mundi. Behind them are the Death Troopers from The Mandalorian, followed by the Galactic Marines and the Republic 501st. And lastly, quite a few AT-ETs and AT-STs.
Thank you for the email, Luke. That's a really cool ground force. I can't imagine many defenders holding up when the Wells Legion comes rolling onto the battlefield.
Luke finishes his email with a fun fact. Luke says, my mother's last name is Walker. My dad's last name is Wells. That's why my name is Luke Jared Wells. But I could have easily been called Luke Skywalker Wells. It's cool because Luke is my favorite Jedi. And that is really cool.
It's absolutely cool, Luke. Keep that name in mind if you ever have a son. You can name him Luke Skywalker Wells. Do you think that'd be a good name, Kat?
Absolutely. I think you should mint that immediately. You know, you could always change your own name. Like, you know.
Once again, thank you very much for the emails, Wes and Luke. Now, listener, send me in your favorite Star Wars character groups. Email me at swlegendslounge@gmail.com or send me a tweet at legendslounge1. And of course, send in your Star Wars questions or if you disagree with any of the opinions I've shared on the show. I love hearing from you all. Kat, it's time to wrap up. Thank you again for joining me today.
It was always so much fun to talk about this crazy universe that we love so much. Thank you again for getting me into all of these emotions. You are the best and worst friend a gal could ask for.
That's what I strive for. On our next episode, we'll wrap up the Republic Commando series with the fifth and final book, Imperial Commando 501st, by Karen Travis. As I said, it's one of the few Legends stories that I've never read, so Kat, we'll both be first-timers. That should be fun.
Yes, I'm so excited.
If listeners would like to contact you or listen to your podcast, Animated Antics, how can they do that?
Yeah, you can find me and Jay at Animated Antics. You can search us on Google Podcasts, Spotify, a couple other places. You can find us on Twitter at Jay and Kat1. Kat is spelled K-A-T, and then Jay is just the letter. You can find us on Instagram at Animated Antics Pod or on Blue Sky. Search the same. So we're always doing different animated series. This year especially looks great for a lot of different series coming out. So, you know, you can always give that a listen.
Listener, join Kat and I for Imperial Commando 501st, coming out on April 5th. Thank you so much for joining us today on the Star Wars Legends Lounge. I'm Aaron Motes. May the Force be with you. And remember, there's always a bit of truth in Legends.